From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Statewide, we have a real problem on our hands, and people's lives hang in the balance.
I don't think the governor is out to do this to try to destroy the state of Illinois or something like that. I think he's looking out for the way he views it, the best interests of the people. One of my major complaints has been, I think the governor has focused so much on the health side of COVID and has neglected the economic cost of COVID time and time again.
We're not asking for any special treatment. And as I said, I had a very productive and but very frank conversation with the governor and his team today. And we've committed to making sure that we're aligned everywhere we possibly can be. And I have no doubt that that's going to happen.
But you can't sit down and cry. I kind of knew what's going to happen because of all these numbers going up. It sucks.
Well, that's a soundbite to sum up 2020, a Chicago restaurant owner not happy that indoor service is being stopped there, and we're seeing that across the state. We also heard from the governor, Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot, and Republican Representative Tim Butler of Springfield. Both Democrats and Republicans, some of them have been critical of the governor in recent days as mitigation has been ordered to ramp up in 10 of 11 regions of Illinois. And we're almost there. Election day is near. We're going to talk about that and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel continues to practice social distancing. We have Charlie Wheeler, an emeritus professor and former director of public affairs reporting program at the University of Illinois Springfield. He's also a longtime State House reporter and observer. Also with us, Hannah Meisel. She's a reporter covering state government and politics for NPR Illinois. And joining us, once again, we have Ray Long from the Chicago Tribune. And Ray, it's good to have you back with us.
Good to be here, Sean.
Well, the trend on the coronavirus is definitely going in the wrong direction. But there is a difference of opinion on just how it can be turned around. Hannah, the governor, laid out some numbers this week, making his case for stopping indoor service at many bars and restaurants in Illinois. Can you give us an update, an overview of what the governor talked about when it comes to these numbers, just how bad things are looking?
Right. He made his case that, you know, it's not just case counts that are going up because people can attribute case counts to more testing. We do have the most robust COVID testing program in the Midwest. But it's also our positivity rates and our hospitalization numbers that have increased dramatically in the last just few weeks. And the governor, he had a frank moment. We taped this Friday morning, so yesterday afternoon, Thursday, he had a frank moment of saying, you know, I had no idea that it would come back so bad so quickly. And I mean, I'm in that camp too. I feel like I personally fooled myself into thinking, oh, well, we have it under control this summer. Maybe there won't be a second wave. Well, here we are. It is end of October. And by Monday, 10 of our 11 regions are going to be operating under resurgence mitigations because things have gotten to the point where either the positivity rate has been above that 8% trigger threshold, or in Cook County and City of Chicago, those mitigations were triggered because of hospitalization rates. And the whole point in the spring, the whole battle cry is we have to flatten the curve so healthcare workers can fight COVID and, you know, we won't overwhelm our health system. And it is scary to see those numbers going up. But the governor's trying to make his case in the face of a lot of criticism and pushback. We saw the mayor of Chicago going out earlier this week telling national news that she was going to try to change the governor's mind on shuttering indoor dining and bar service. I'm not really exactly sure what she was thinking there because it's not like the governor is going to change his mind. But she is not alone. There's a lot of Republicans and frankly, a lot of Democrats. I don't think it helps anyone to frame the story as, oh, it's just Republicans who are upset, because we've seen lawmakers this week, Democrats, who've written the governor a letter saying, could we possibly either rethink this or get these businesses more aid? Because if they're being told that, I'm sorry, the very act of taking off your mask to eat or drink inside, your business model is spreading COVID, then what else can they do? It is end of October in the Midwest. It's not very pleasant to sit outside And frankly, a lot of businesses don't have the space or they can't afford things like tents. So it's a very difficult situation.
Yeah, Ray, it's we mentioned there was both Democrats and Republicans. If I'm a business owner and I'm upset by this move and I feel I'm doing everything I can to make things safe, and a lot of them say they are, they've invested in a lot of safety precautions, plexiglass, all of tents, all of this stuff that they've tried to do, and here they feel like their business is going to get hit by this. Who are they going to call? They're going to call their lawmaker, whether that's a Democrat or Republican. So of course they're the ones, the state representatives and senators are the ones that are going to hear about this the most, right?
Right. Plus the governor's office itself. And the reality is that a lot of these restaurants are operating on a thin margin anyway. We've heard that before, even when they're in good times. So when you've got restaurants who have spent maybe $10,000, $15,000, $30,000 to install tents so that they can have social distancing and install heaters so people can sit out in a tent with a heater on, or so they can have a ventilator that theoretically uses ultraviolet rays to knock out some of the bad viruses in the air conditioning system, in the heater ventilation system. Well, you've got a lot of people who are hanging on a thread. And so not only are they thinking they've got to scramble to get ready to go, suddenly when they think they're ready to go, it's like Lucy in the football pulling it away from Charlie Brown. They don't have a chance to serve their meals inside.
And it's not just the business owners, but the employees who work there. I heard one restaurant owner talking about how they had hired several people back about a month ago, and thinking that, we're getting ready for the fall and we're going to keep going. Everything's hopefully going to work out. And suddenly they've got to tell these people, we don't need you right now, or we're not going to be able to use you. Charlie, I want to go back to something we heard at the start of the program, the Representative Tim Butler. He's a Springfield Republican. And, he was pretty complimentary of the governor. He felt the governor is doing, the job that he thinks he needs to do. But he said he did not feel that the governor has paid enough attention to the economic damage being caused. Your thoughts on that? Do you think the governor has done enough on that side of the issue?
I think it comes down to, what kind of a trade-off do you want to make? How much is a human life worth? And I think, for better or for worse, Governor Pritzker is erring on the side, I'm going to do everything possible to save every life that I can. And I think people arguing the other side are saying, well, but look at the impact on these folks who are going to lose their life savings. And I guess his response would be, well, you lose your life savings, but you're still alive. And I guess that's the decision you have to make. I personally would put a lot of blame on our national government, the president, the House, and the Senate, for not being able to get their act together and provide the kind of financial assistance needed to help out small businesses, not just the owners of these restaurants and bars, but also the employees. Unemployment benefits are just about exhausted. And what are people going to do when they're gone? And that's something that only the federal government is in a position to address. And they've totally dropped the ball on that.
Now, Hannah, it's not just the economy that people are looking at. Some people are upset about just restrictions being put on people being able to do certain things, including young people. And this week we saw quite a big dust up between the governor and the Illinois High School Association. It oversees high school sports in the state. The governor and the administration came out one day and said, we're going to put some of these winter sports, basketball, wrestling, I believe hockey, into what's considered to be high risk. And then all of a sudden the next day, the IHSA, their board met and said, nope, go ahead, we're going to go forward with it. Schools will have to decide if they want to compete. But there are people who feel as though, and what I'm hearing a lot is people saying the governor's not tamping down the places where the spread is really occurring. And that tends to be social gatherings. They don't believe this is happening as much with sports. But this just goes to show the level of not only dissatisfaction out there right now, but that COVID fatigue that we had talked about earlier.
Yes, I think that, you're seeing the limits of what, the governor can do, even with you know, this extraordinary executive power that he's using during this, you know, crisis, because the state's own contact tracing data, which that's another issue that, you know, folks are accusing them of either manipulating the data or, you know, not releasing, they're being called on to release the full set of data. And they say, oh, we're going to do that in, you know, just a few days here. We need to build a portal. We need to build an online infrastructure. Anyway, the state's own data apparently says that the most common place that people are getting it are these private social gatherings. Well, guess what? You know, we don't live in, you know, Soviet Russia. We don't live in a police state. And so it's not like the National Guard can come knocking at my door and break up the party that I'm having. And so, you know, their calculation is that the next best thing is cracking down on bars and restaurants. And then, you know, they're trying to control what they can control, which, you know, does include these high school sports. And so, but I think, you know, the bigger problem here is that the IHSA this summer, they agreed to things like moving football to the spring. You know, football is a very emotional thing. It's a very American thing, but they agreed to it. But, you know, in this case this week, they claim blindsided by the decision. We're given only 15 minutes warning until the governor announced it at one of his afternoon press conferences this week. And that's a common theme that we've heard from folks who are trying to work with the governor's office, people who, you know, are trying to work with them in good faith, that the governor's office is being insular and not letting other people, you know, into decisions and, you know, ruling from top down. The House Republicans held a press conference yesterday afternoon, and which I think you mentioned earlier. And it's not like their complaint is open the state, open it completely, blah, blah, blah. It's, you know, the same complaint that they've had since April is, okay, you know, we've stabilized the situation. Why won't you let us as a co-equal branch of government help you make decisions? And, you know, they feel rebuffed and rebuffed and rebuffed. And I, you know, I'd imagine that is a very difficult situation to be in because you have constituents calling you and you can run it up the ladder. But, you know, technically you're not supposed to run it up the ladder to the governor's office because, again, it's a co-equal branch of government. And that's frustrating for them.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford, along with Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and Ray Long from the Chicago Tribune. Before we move off of this, the pandemic and what we've just talked about here, Charlie, I want to go back to you real quick on this. I mean, we are the governor's getting some complaints from people, as Hannah mentioned, that some of these decisions are top down decisions. They're not being asked to, you know, not being able to weigh in and give their opinion or at least have that considered. That sounds like some other governors we have seen in the past, and it hasn't worked well when that's happened.
Well, in some other states, legislators have overruled governors. The governor of Wisconsin attempted to put in some more stringent requirements on folks up there. The legislature wouldn't go along with it. The Wisconsin Supreme Court overruled him, and now Wisconsin has one of the worrying, I would say, tragic outbreaks in cases, positivity, deaths. And the idea of having a committee do this, I just don't think it works. I've not heard any of the Republicans suggest specifics of what they would do differently. And a couple of them made what I thought were really ignorant remarks in terms of trying to portray this as some kind of a political decision, that there's some political advantage for Governor Pritzker in shutting down parts of the economy. And the reason I say that is really a dumb thing to say, you know, probably Illinois' biggest problem right now is the virus. The second biggest problem is state finances. And is it in the governor's best interest to shut down restaurants in terms of the financial situation? Let's say my family and I go to a restaurant, we spend $100. The state gets $5 in sales tax on that. We go to the local Schnucks and get $100 worth of groceries. the state gets zero taxes from that. As a matter of fact, if people were to just go to restaurants and not go to the grocery store for their food, the state would have something like $2 billion a year more in revenues. Now, they're not going to do that. But the point is, to suggest that Pritzker is doing this for some kind of political motive, I think is just ridiculous.
Well, let me turn attention now to what's coming up here just in a few days, the election, although a lot of people have been hearing about it for weeks and even voting in it as well. And I'm going to start with Ray, because, Ray, you've been covering something that I don't think a few years back we would have considered to be that big of an issue, and that is the Supreme Court races, whether or not to keep one justice on the bench and whether or not to who to elect in another district of the Supreme Court. And why is that? Why are we hearing and seeing so much about that this time?
Well, I think the answer there is money, money and power. What we've got that seems to be the one that's gathering the most money and the most interest is the North Central Illinois Judicial District Number 3. That stretches from Rock Island on the Mississippi side on over to Kankakee and Will counties on the Indiana side, and on down to Peoria and Tazewell counties on the south side. It is a race for the heart of Illinois. And what is interesting is that Speaker Madigan, in a really a political masterstroke a few years ago in 2000, was able to pour money in at the last minute and take really flip the seat from a long-held Republican seat to make it a Democrat. The Democrat who won was Tom Kilbride. He ran again in 2010 for retention. He won again. Madigan helped him again. And now Madigan is trying to help him keep the seat for a rare third term. What we see here is that billionaires like Ken Griffin, who is the hedge fund owner and major donor on things like the tax amendment in the anti-tax stance on the tax amendment, and another billionaire, Richard Uihlein, a packaging mogul, and a big contributor who is also opposed to the tax amendment, they are giving big. So Griffin's put in $4.5 million. Uihlein's put in $1 million. A lot of conservative-leaning dark money groups are also contributing. So they have racked up between the Madigan side, which also has unions and trial lawyers giving big six-figure amounts. They've racked up nearly $12 million in contributions, which is an all-time record. The all-time spending record was closer to $9 million down in the 5th District in deep southern Illinois. So why is this important? Well, Tom Kilbride represents the fourth out of 4-3 majority in the Illinois Supreme Court. If Madigan had not won that district years ago, the Democrats would not hold the majority, because a few years after Madigan flipped that seat in the third judicial district, the fifth district down in southern Illinois was flipped and went Republican. It had been Democrat. So now we're also having a race here in the fifth district, which is the deep southern Illinois race, and it's a one-on-one between the Republican and Democrat, and they're in a Donnybrook down there to try to figure out what the balance will be. If all remains the same, it'll be 4-3. If Kilbride is not retained and he needs 60% versus just 50% plus one, if you're running one-on-one, he needs a 60% vote on retention. And Republicans think that they've got a shot at keeping him under that 60%. And if that happens, then he would become he would be out of office. The six justices on the Supreme Court, three from each party, would then try to find an interim to replace him. They may deadlock under the Republican dream scenario. They would deadlock, and then have an even number of partisan Supreme Court justices on the Illinois Supreme Court over the next 2 years in case they have to deal with remap or something. But that's a rare, rare occurrence. I'm not sure that they've ever deadlocked and kept a seat vacant that long. Finally, in 2022, they would run for a Kilbride replacement, which if they're spending $11 to $12 million on retention, just imagine how much it would be if they went one-on-one in a heated race in the 3rd District.
Yeah, and Ray, this
Hey, Ray, I have a question. I could understand what the Republican strategy is to try and tie up the Supreme Court, but I'm not sure how that would work with remap in the sense that the Constitution says that if a redistricting plan is approved, the Supreme Court has initial and exclusive jurisdiction over hearing whether it's constitutional or not. And as I've always understood it, the basic assumption is that a duly enacted law is constitutional until some court says it isn't.
Yeah.
So if there's a remap that goes before the high court and it's tied 3-3 and they can't agree that it isn't, that would mean that it would remain in effect, right?
Yeah, yeah. That I think that is where the Republican logic is flawed. And so,
here's another thought to throw out there. Let's suppose that Republicans gain the court 4-3. What's to stop the Democrats from redistricting the Supreme Court in the districts outside of Cook County? The Constitution says Cook County is one district with 3 judges. The other 4 districts are supposed to be substantially equal in population. So why could not the Democrats draw a district that would encompass the collar counties and then divide the rest of the state up into 3 districts? And given the voting trends in the collar counties, it's quite conceivable that a Democrat could be elected in a collar county district.
Well, so you're playing the chessboard, and the Republicans are just trying to win on the checker game right now. So I think that that's really, those are other real considerations. So once you play it out, and you can keep playing it out to several layers, I do think there's flaws in it, but they view this, the Republicans view this as a chance, at least a shot for them to try to get back or actually get for the first time in 50 plus years, the majority of the Illinois Supreme Court.
Just a couple of minutes here left, and let me switch over to what Charlie was just talking about. There's some changes in voting trends we're seeing. Hannah, the State House and Senate, we do not expect that control of those will flip during this election. Democrats will still have big numbers, maybe even bigger than they have now. But there are some things to watch and some things going on, and kind of give us a quick overview of what's happening when it comes to legislative races.
Right. I mean, in 2018, we saw a pretty dramatic shift toward Democrats in those formerly reliably Republican suburbs. And a lot of high-level analysis says that has to do with white suburban women trending, you know, more blue, and particularly a reaction to the Trump presidency. And then down in the Metro East in Southern Illinois, we already saw a lot of erosion for the long-held Democratic labor strongholds in that election, and we're bound to see possibly even more. I'd say Democrats are at risk of losing 2, perhaps 3 seats down there. And so, you know, that will change, you know, it won't, like you said, it won't change control of the House, but it'll be another step toward this, you know, kind of regional deadlock that we have seen over the last few years. And, you know, Illinois has long enjoyed this kind of interesting mix of Southern Democrats and, you know, business-minded suburban Republicans, and people can go to Springfield and all get along and, you know, get to know each other. And But, you know, as we continue on a national level, becoming more and more polarized, unfortunately, that's, you know, Illinois is no exception. We're not, you know, we're no longer unique in that. And, you know, I think that's going to, unfortunately, create more deadlock in the future.
All right. Well, time now for our notes from the field. And Ray, let's go to you first.
Well, I think one interesting thing is that Sherry Bustos, the Democrat who is in the upper north central area of Illinois that I was talking about with the Kilbride Supreme Court race, part of her district has the Kilbride race, overlaps with the Kilbride race, and that district, that Kilbride district, went for Trump and went for Bruce Rauner in the last two elections. And so there is this belief by some Republicans that the tax amendment and the Kilbride, anti-Kilbride forces could bring out enough voters who might also vote against Sherry Bustos and give her a run for the money this year.
Hannah?
Early voting, of course, pushed by this extraordinary pandemic election year. We have now seen 3 million Illinois voters cast their votes early, either by mail or going early to the polls. And we saw a huge amount of early mail-in ballots being returned in the last few weeks. We are now up to 1.5 million. But early in-person voting has almost caught up. As of this Friday morning, we are at 1.48 million voters having gone to the polls early. And I think we could, you know, the laws that were put in place by the General Assembly this spring because of the pandemic were just supposed to be temporary. But I think that it could lead to a longer-term shift more in favor of voting early and voting by mail.
All right. And Charlie?
Well, the Illinois Gaming Board announced this week that they were not going to be able to meet the deadline to approve new casino licenses under the law that was passed a couple years ago. And so that's a disappointment, particularly for Rockford, because they were all set to go with a single applicant looking to build a Hard Rock Casino in Rockford. And also for Southern Illinois, where one in Williamson County was set to go. And so it'll be April before they can get going, as well as the other sites in Chicago, of course, Danville and Waukegan in the south suburbs. And the difficulty there is that big money is going to come into the state in terms of casino revenues. The estimate is something like $300, $400 million a year when they're up and going, plus perhaps as much as $1 billion in initial licensing fees over a number of years that would go towards the capital program that we've embarked on.
All right, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and also Ray Long with the Chicago Tribune. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org or through the NPR One app. Production assistance was provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.